You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. Well, we've dubbed him the face, the voice, the leader of the Let Russ Cook movement. We'll see if he agrees with that. He's with us now. Our buddy, you know him, you love him. Jake Heaps is here. Jake, how are you, man?
Hey, doing great, guys. I have to say, I miss all three of you. I hope you guys are doing well. I can't wait till we can all see each other again. That's for sure. But hope you guys are enjoying this beautiful weather.
Yeah, same for you and your family and your kids. Hopefully everybody is safe, and we miss you too, buddy. But am I being unfair in dubbing you the voice and the face of this movement, the Let Russ Cook, or as Jim likes to call them, the cooking people?
Well, I don't know if I'm the face of the cooking people, but I always get a crack out of that as I hear you guys on the afternoon show. But I think that I definitely lean towards that way. But I also might not be as extremist as the Let Russ Cook people out there. So I guess I'm here to explain what a reasonable cooking looks like for Russell Wilson. How about that?
Okay. And what does that look like? What does it mean when you say Let Russ Cook?
Well, to me, I think the biggest thing is that when you look at the philosophy of Pete Carroll and what he believes in and what he has been great at in his career, since he had that failed attempt as a head coach with the New England Patriots, is from USC on through his 10 years as a head coach here for the Seahawks, is been playing great defense and then establishing the run and controlling the game. An unbelievable stat that I saw out there that Pete Carroll, under the Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson era, they have been in 139 of 143 of their games together, where they are either one score lead or they are within a point to come back. So they are literally in every single game that they play in, down to the wire. That is including playoff games. That's an unbelievable stat. So it's hard. I understand it's hard to then look at that philosophy and say, well, why would you want to change? Why would you want to adapt? And I look at Russell Wilson, and that part of it is because you have a player that is evolving, and not just evolving as a franchise quarterback. He's one of the best players in the league. He's arguably one of the best quarterbacks to play, or one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL right now, if not the best, next to Patrick Mahomes. So with all that being said, I think what it looks like is you allow the offense to go through him more. And what does that mean? It doesn't necessarily mean more attempts. I think it means being more aggressive in the first half of games. And where that really stands out to me is in first and second down. So a statistic here for you, the Seahawks produced a positive EPA, expected points per average. They were third in the league at that point in terms of when they threw the ball on first and second down. And they were in those area, in that area, they passed the ball. They ranked 22nd in passing attempts in those downs. So if you have a positive outcome and rank one of the best in the NFL in first and second down, why would you not lean towards that a little bit more often? And so I think that that's what it means. Also, what it means is that Russell Wilson over the last 2 years has shown that he has been able to take more of the responsibility of the offense at the line of scrimmage. He's been able to get them in positive plays, whether it's converting a pass to a run to a pass, or calling drives. He has shown that. So I think that that's, you know, different points where Russell, I think, can do more of managing the game at the line of scrimmage and operating and controlling the flow of the game in a positive way for Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer.
Okay, Jake. Well, let's see. So you said, you know, it's not about necessarily passing more, but then you followed that up by saying that they should pass more on first and second down. Is that right? Am I hearing that right? I mean,
no, you are hearing that right. So I'm saying is that the percentage in which they run on first and second down is very high. And the success that they've had on passing in first and second down is a lot better than what they do running wise. So I don't think that that's going to be or mean that they should pass every first and second down, Dave. But I think that they are in a situation where if you look at it statistically, they produce positive numbers in those situations.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I the thing I really totally agree with you is that you have an evolving quarterback here. I just think he has become incredibly smart, and you know, and some of the checks and things like that, sometimes that slows down the tempo part of it. But I got some pretty amazing stats, and Jim was kind of, I don't know, depressed about these stats. And I had our guy, Nishant Kanipudi, who is one of the best interns of all time. So I had him go through Russ's
Absolutely.
8 years. And yeah, so we got kind of screwed up with some of the stats. I had that they were – so all I looked at was, are they throwing it more in the first half than the second half? Because a lot of people were saying mm-hmm. – that wasn't based on any of the things I heard from the cooking people or anything like that. It's more from, like, the texters. They'll say, well, they've just been very, very conservative in the first half. And I'm like, well, let's just see. You know, and so first of all, a lot of the times, you know, like I think – yeah, pretty much half the time, at least going off of some of these numbers I'm looking at, that they're throwing the ball more in the first half than the second half. But then the other thing is, and I'm not sure if this is 100% correct, because there's a lot of times where there's the even number of attempts or they're off just by one. But with Russell throwing the ball more in the first half than the second half, they're 64-12, including the playoffs. So, and then, you know, you look in the playoff games that they've won when throwing the ball more in the first half, Washington in 2012, 2013, the New Orleans game, they were even actually in that one. Russ threw 9 in the first half, 9 in the second half. The Super Bowl against Denver threw it more in the first half, and then Carolina in 14 and Philadelphia last year. So, I mean, I think it does say two things. One is that, you know, Russ is very good when he's throwing more in the first half, but also I just think it indicates that, look, they're not being as conservative as everybody thinks when there are a good number of games where they are throwing the ball more in the first half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would agree with you, Dave. I would agree with you on that, absolutely. And the other side of that too, Dave, is that I think Brian Schottenheimer, who has gotten a lot of criticism, I think he's actually done a pretty outstanding job. And I just mentioned that evolution of Russell Wilson and where he's at currently. I think there's been a tremendous working relationship between the two, and that they've grown from year one in 2018 to 2019. And I honestly expect them to continue to grow more in 2020. And so I think that's what I'm talking about. And what I'm seeing here is that there is some of this movement to start leaning in that direction. How far will they go remains to be seen. But I think we all know that they're not going to quite, you know, delve into, you know, the Kansas City realm, because that's not really the strength of the team. That's not the strength of what Pete Carroll likes to do or what his philosophy is. And I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing. But I think as you look at Russell Wilson right now, I think he has that Peyton Manning ability in him right now in terms of going to the line of scrimmage and being able to get you in a good situation. And to me, that's more of what I look for in terms of letting Russ cook, so to speak, is that he's not calling the plays on his own, but that him and Brian Schottenheimer are working very close together, much like Peyton Manning and Tom Moore did during their run in Indianapolis and what he did with Denver and Adam Gase and those types of things. I think you just continue to loosen the leash on one of the best quarterbacks in the game and allow him to continue to put you in great situations.
Jake, one of the things I've talked about is not necessarily throwing, you know, the ball more often, you know, 25 attempts, fine, 26, whatever that average number is, I'm at peace with that. What I would like to see is them to mix up the tempo and just keep the defense off balance a bit. I feel like they get a little predictable in that they're going to drain that clock down. And I do understand it is a philosophy. They want to work that clock down, especially give the defense a break if the defense is not stout the way it was not last year. But just, you know, we get in that mode where we're watching that play clock go down into the red numbers, and it's 5, 4, 3, and you're like, snap it, snap it, snap it. And they're really consistent with that. But when we've seen Russ in a two-minute drill, whether it's at the end of the half or the end of a game, and we've seen how efficient and explosive they can be, I'd like to see him mix that in more. Not every drive, not every, you know, first down or second down, but just mix it up to keep that defense off balance a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that that's been a conversation for them, and that's been the great mystery for them. Look, they said that, hey, we would love to be able to be in a situation where we can put our finger directly on what needs to be done, and they haven't quite done that, because if they knew that that was going to give them the results, at least from Pete Carroll's perspective and Brian Schottenheimer's perspective, they would be doing it. But I will say this, Bob, that I do think that there is a great effort that is being made into allowing that to be the case. That, you know, I think you even saw it at points last year where they were playing with better tempo. Not always, as you pointed out, there were some glaring moments where the clock would continue to boil down, and really in situational football on third down, fourth down. But I think that it's a goal of theirs to really start playing with better tempo. And that doesn't mean 2-minute offense. It means how quickly can we snap the ball or get on the ball? You know, very much like the LA Rams, they don't necessarily snap the football in the same mode of a 2-minute, but they are constantly on the line of scrimmage. And the guy who's calling the plays is Sean McVay, and telling Jared Goff what the adjustments are going to be. In this situation, I think what you get yourself into is you get on the ball, you get the play or a suggestion or two, like I would call it, from Brian Schottenheimer, and allow Russell Wilson from there to get you in the right call.
Okay, well, Jake, what's the trade-off for you as a quarterback? Because if you go tempo, because you know this, coaches, they want to get an exactly the right personnel grouping. They want to get the exact right call. You know, that's why they work all week to, you know, to try to get the best call in the best situation. What's the trade-off for, you know, going up tempo? I mean, some of that stuff, getting different personnel groupings on the field, you know, making checks, things like that, kind of flies in the face a little bit with the tempo, doesn't it?
Well, it can, but I think it's a different version of tempo. You know, as an offense, when you're trying to attack defenses, you either change the tempo, you create misdirection at the snap of the football with motions and different things of that nature. And so what you're able to accomplish by being on the line of scrimmage with like an offense like Sean McVay is it forces you to keep your personnel either A, on the field, or B, it makes you be more in your base checks more often. And so I think that when you're at the line of scrimmage, Dave, and still making audibles along the way, is you're not allowing the team, the defense, to sub out. And that becomes now your version of 2-minute and keeping that defense on the field and that tempo alive, and being unpredictable with it. So I think there's different ways to satisfy both parties where you're continuing to be smart with the clock and not put your team at a disadvantage, and then still being able to have the capability to turn up the heat or turn up the tempo in a given drive, which I think is an exciting development for this offense. And they're feeling comfortable that they can head in that direction. So, you know, I think that there's a nice mix that hopefully we're going to see here in 2020.
All right, Jake, it's time for a question from a non-cooking person. You know, I'm just wondering, you know, and you know the X's and O's. I don't, so I'm not even going to begin to go there very far with you anyway. I just was always led to believe that Russell Wilson, or any NFL quarterback, not any, but most, when they go up to the line of scrimmage, they have the ability to audible. Are you saying that that's not necessarily the case with him?
Well, it's not necessarily the case, Jim, on every given play. Obviously, there's certain times where you're given a play call and the offensive coordinator wants you to run that particular call. There's also different plays where you can come to the line and you call them check with me's, where you are given two plays at a time and you can get into all of them, or you let the quarterback freelance. And it's not just that he's just calling any random play at, you know, that comes to his mind, but that you're coaching him throughout the week and saying, hey, if we get this look, we want to check to that. And I think sometimes when you have younger quarterbacks or even franchise quarterbacks, everybody operates at a different mental capacity. And I think Russell Wilson's always been a very smart guy, but he hasn't been advanced or had a PhD in coming to the line of scrimmage and seeing a defense and knowing exactly what the offense needs to get to, because it wasn't part of the conversation early on in his career. Now that it is with him and Brian Schottenheimer, I think now you're seeing Russell Wilson being able to have his mic drop out in the middle of the Cleveland Browns game and know exactly what they want to get to on offense, and they know exactly what the defense is presenting. So I just think that there's evolution that has happened here in a very positive way.
Okay, well, if you don't want to answer this question, that's fine, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it. You work for Russell at his academy. You know Russell Wilson pretty well. I think you're probably friends with him, and I saw that he liked one of your tweets about the offense being more aggressive, and so that indicated that he's in favor of these changes. Are you led to believe that this is something that Russell really wants?
Yeah, of course. I think when you're looking at a elite franchise quarterback, I mean, how could you not want that? What we all know is Russell Wilson is the ultimate competitor, right? And the ultimate winner along with Pete Carroll. And so I think at some point in your career, especially early on, you know, you're going to go into the situation and continue to do everything you can to help the team win. And if that is handing the ball off to Marshawn Lynch and being extremely efficient and being a quote-unquote game manager, as many people like to put that tag on him early in his career, then great. That's what he's going to do to win and use his legs and all of that. And I think we all can agree on that Russell Wilson has grown and that this roster is not the same roster that they once had. And so I think that it's good for change. It's good for evolution. But the other thing is I think that the stat that you're referring to, when they were up 4 points, I think this is the stat you're referring to, when they were ahead 4 points or more heading into halftime, they're undefeated. I think it was 56-0 was the stat, if I remember right. Yeah. And that's an unbelievable stat. Yep. And so when you look at teams like Kansas City, and again, there's lots of different ways to win. And these two teams that I'm going to say, there's two different styles. There's Kansas City and there's the Baltimore Ravens. The Baltimore Ravens run more of a smash mouth type of system, whereas the Kansas City Chiefs are very clearly more of an open, throw the ball around type of system. But they're very aggressive in games early on too. And they don't take their foot off the gas. And so I think that that's one thing when you're talking about a defense that really struggles. There's two philosophies, and Pete Carroll is the philosophy of, I want to keep the game tight and close to the fourth quarter, to give ourselves the best chance to win. And teams like the Ravens and Kansas City have said, you know what, we are going to try and get up ahead in the first half so that we can control the game. And therefore our pass rushers, can be able to get after the quarterback easier, because we know what they're going to try and do. So again, it's two different styles of philosophy. There's lots of ways to do it. And I don't think it's necessarily, I think when we have this conversation, it's almost like it's a threat or attack at Pete Carroll. And I hope when that conversation arises, that it's not necessarily that way. It's just looking at your roster and saying what is best for the team and moving forward in that category. So I think ultimately that's the conversation. Pete Carroll and all the coaches on the staff, they clearly know a lot more ball about any of us. That's for sure. So I think it's just fun and interesting to have these debates about, you know, what's going to be the best direction for this team moving forward. And as they're trying to go after a Super Bowl, how do they get themselves there?
Jake, I got to ask you one about something you said the other day, and that was that you'd want to see, and this is hypothetical because I don't think he's going to play, Antonio Brown in a Seahawks uniform. Come on, man. I'm with you on most things. You know I love you, but I heard that and I went, I couldn't disagree with Jake more.
this guy is toxic, and we're not even, we don't even know what's real and what's not about the investigations and accusations of sexual assault. Just the things we've seen for a fact, him screaming at the mother of his children, him assaulting a moving driver, him, you know, calling the Mike Mayock a cracker and sitting out because he didn't have the right helmet. And I mean, you can go up and down the list. The guy's a creep. He's got some issues. Why would you possibly want that element in your locker room?
Yeah, it's a great question, Bob, because morally, I am right there with you. Like, I am absolutely there with you, and it's a constant, or not a constant, but I would just say, as I said that, it was a difficult thing for me to say. And the only way that you say that is when you look at it from a football, pure football perspective. And I know you could point to, well, he's done X, Y, and Z as a football player as well. And I think ultimately what you look at is what are, you know, you talk about superstar potential. What is that and where can that come from? And so what are the percentages of that happening with Antonio Brown? Probably not crazy high, but the Seahawks are definitely, I think, keeping their tabs on it, keeping their eye on it, and seeing how it develops. So I think it's definitely something on the table.
Well, Jake, I'm just wondering what the wide receiver room thinks about that. If they hear that Russell Wilson wants to bring in a guy like Antonio Brown, what do you think Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf think?
I think there's two obvious reactions. I think there's one reaction of, I'm a competitor and we don't need that guy. I can take the load on of that role, and we don't need that. And secondly, I think it just adds a little bit more fuel to the fire to continue to keep working and prove that you're going to be at the top of your game and at the best. And so I think that those are the two reactions that you may have. And ultimately, those guys, if Antonio Brown or even like Josh Gordon, when he was added to the mix, they're not going to be contentious. DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett don't really have a contentious bone in their body in terms of teammates and how they are in the locker room. So I think anytime you bring on a player like that, obviously the Seahawks are going to have very strict stipulations, just like they do with Josh Gordon. At the first sign of trouble, you're going to get rid of that player. And is there a tremendous amount of risk involved? Absolutely. But it, just like we've seen over the years with the NFL, there's been teams willing to make very big risks on players that have a tremendous amount of talent. And I think there's a multiple teams interested to see how Antonio Brown's situation is developing.
Jake, it's great to catch up with you, man. We miss you. And again, glad to hear everything is good with your family and friends and staying healthy and safe. We appreciate you taking time and have a great weekend, man. I hope to see you soon.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime. And great getting to catch up with you. Hope to talk to you guys soon. And thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Jake.
There you go. Jake Heaps, you can hear him every day from noon to 3 with Tom, Jake, and Stacy. A reminder, we've got another edition of Mariners Classic tonight at 7 p.m. Randy Johnson strikes out 19 versus the White Sox back in 1997. So you can relive that moment tonight. It's brought to you by Roofers and Waterproofers Local 54. Well, the Mariners Spring Training Facility in Peoria is reopened, but with a lot of precautions. Our Mariners insider Shannon Dreher is going to join us next to explain. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. A reminder, you've got radios in your homes. If you've got a smart speaker, Alexa, Google, whatever you've got, just tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM, and you've got a radio right there, or you can download the app for free, brought to you by Dubin Law Group. Coming up in the next segment, less than 10 minutes from now, we'll get to your mean, venomous things you text into us every week. Mean text coming up in the next segment. But right now, we talk some baseball with our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher. Hello, Shannon.
Guys?
Good to talk to you, and happy birthday. I hope you're celebrating as well as you can. You only turned 32 once in your life, so I hope you enjoy it.
Right back at you, and someday you'll catch up with me, Bob.
That's right. That's right. as far as what's going on in baseball, we see, you know, teams are out there. They're reopening facilities, and that is true of the Mariners. They just reopened their facility in Peoria, but there are a lot of things in place, a lot of precautions. You wrote a story that's up at 710sports.com. People can check out. But for those that haven't had a chance to read your story yet, what's going on with the facility and how are they handling players coming into the building?
Well, the facility reopened on Tuesday, and they were able to do that because the state of Arizona is allowing it right now. So the Mariners jumped on that, but they're taking precautions. And I think a lot of teams are probably looking at this as a test run for what they will do during the regular season, provided there is a regular season. And I spoke with Jake Fraley. He is one of nine, perhaps ten. I think Evan White was going to show up in the next couple of days. Mariners that were in the area that we're working out there, and it is very different. And the full conversation, I just put up a podcast for this week, and the conversation with Jake is on that podcast, but it's different. It is, they have to come in groups of four, and that's all they're allowing, four players in the complex at one time. Jake said that, you know, when you go into spring training, we are so used to walking through the same door that we walk through all the time. They're not doing that anymore. They now have to come around. On the minor league side, there are two medical personnel people that are right there. Their temperatures are taken. Their information is written down. Some questions are asked. They're handed masks, which they are to wear at all times inside the facility, and then have to wash their hands and sanitize them before they're allowed to go any further. And so, I mean, obviously that is a very different feel. When they're out on the field at this time, they're only allowing two players at one time allowed on each field. Jake, for him, and if you want kind of a picture of what they've been able to do in recent months, we've heard different, you know, the big-time athletes have got the high-tech gyms and whatnot in their homes, but most don't, and most don't have hitting facilities and things like that. Jake said he was just happy to get out on the field and be able to take fly balls. It was the first time he had taken a fly ball since March getting out there. So they're having some very light workouts. They're doing some light baseball-type activity that should ramp up, but it's very controlled. They have scheduled times when they show up. They have a partner that they work out with. They're assigned to a coach, but it's not a matter of just going in to work out right now. And he said the best thing for him was actually getting in the weight room. And they have just a state-of-the-art weight room in Peoria, which is actually probably, it's definitely bigger and probably has better equipment, more things than the facility that they have at T-Mobile Park right now. But he said it was the first time that there were things that he was able to do that he couldn't do. And he has a good situation where he's staying. He and Justin Dunn have a house that they're staying at near the facility, and they built as good a gym as they can. But with the way that athletes are just so highly tuned right now and what they are doing in the off season, going to so many high performance centers, you can't replicate that at home. So it was the first time he was able to get that kind of workout in. He was grateful for that.
Hey, Shannon, happy birthday, by the way. And also, what about some of the things, like for the guys, I heard there's a thing about no spitting. And so do we get any kind of an idea? I guess they're thinking everybody's going to follow the rules. But, I mean, if you don't, what's going to happen? Has there been any discussion about, you know, if you don't follow the rules, how punitive is it going to be?
I haven't heard about that, but one of the things that I've kind of gathered from talking to a couple of different people is that we heard earlier this week that the two sides were far apart on health and safety. And then Ken Rosenthal came out and said, no, it's not that far. And what I'm getting right now, and there have been, I think you have to be careful in what you hear. There have just been a couple of very kind of high profile. You look at the Blake Snells, you look at the Trevor Bowers. I mean, that's just two out of how many players in baseball. But what I'm kind of hearing more is that while they had some adjustments that they wanted to the safety, and while some have said it's going to be impossible not to spit, it's going to be impossible to do this or to do that, there are two things. I think that one of the reasons why they want testing every day, and that's what the players came back with on the safety side, whereas baseball said we will test multiple times a week, the players want every day. I think that they believe that they can create an environment that if they're testing every day, then they don't have to worry about those other things as much, the spitting and things that might be almost unavoidable because they've done it all of their lives. But the other thing that I'm hearing is that they're not so up in arms about the spitting, but I think they're more concerned about things like the training room. The agreement that they were, or the proposal that they were presented with, had only two trainers per team that would be allowed in for games and kind of the bubble they're trying to create in the stadiums. That's not enough. The things that they do to get ready, they need more than two trainers. They wouldn't be allowed in the hot and the cold tubs. Well, those are all things that affect performance. And I think that the bigger concern right now is injury. None of these players know how they're going to come out of this. This has been, even though, you know, they've all done something physically, but it hasn't been what they've typically done. I think there is a huge concern for injury as well as the COVID-19 virus. And I think that that is kind of the thing that they're more focused on, is that physically, what are the things that they can get back that will ensure that they can do the things that they have done year after year after year to get themselves out on the field.
All right, Shannon, the most important thing to me is how are you celebrating your birthday today?
I've got a family, some socially distanced nieces and nephews who insisted on having a birthday party. So it's definitely a little bit different right now, but it's great to be around the family.
Shannon, good stuff. We appreciate it. Hope you have as happy of a birthday as you can have, considering the circumstances. We appreciate the time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
There you go. Shannon Dreher, our Mariners insider, joining us, talking about what's going on out there as the complex in Peoria is opened up. Meanwhile, high school athletes in our region and across the nation had their sports seasons and even their careers cut short by the COVID-19 pandemic, and 710 ESPN Seattle wants to recognize them. So if you know of a local team or a local athlete impacted by this crisis, then use the hashtag 710 Hometown Heroes. Again, hashtag 710 Hometown Heroes. Use it on Twitter or Facebook to share their story and why they are your hometown hero. All right, it's time to end the week with a little bit of fun. Fridays are where we let you just take your best shots at us. We read them on the air. Got to be creative. Mean Text coming up with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. It's how we end the week every week here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. We go through your texts that you send in every single day to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. And often they're questions, they're comments, they're, you want to debate. It's always in good fun for the most part. But then there's a segment of you that really want to get mean, really want to say hurtful things. So we decided to collect those, the most creative of those, and unveil them every Friday and put them on display for everybody. And that's really the only stipulation. Just be creative. I mean, you know, somebody the other day said, furlough Bob. That's not creative. That's just, you're just kind of being a jerk. So at least be creative. And we've got a little collection here that Brian is going to read. Brian?
For starters, given that Dave is such a caveman, it's odd to hear him use the word evolving.
that one
was from the 206.
Evolving.
Yeah, that one was from the 206 there.
I would have to agree with him.
Who started the caveman thing? Was that Salk?
For me?
Yeah.
Calling you back. I wasn't aware it was a thing. No, I've
heard you bring it up before. I thought Salk said it or something.
Oh, he said that one time we had an argument. It was about paternity leave, and he called me a caveman, which is a really intelligent way to end a conversation. It's when you've run out of arguments, then you start calling names. That's the way to go.
What else is there, Brian?
Also from the 206, I believe to say that Jim is having technical difficulties is oxymoronic.
What's that mean? What the hell? I mean, I got morons out
like
there, but
shrimp.
I don't know if I have oxymorons.
What else, Brian?
If we can hear Jim, his connection is too good.
Oh,
oh, that's a good one. I like it.
There you go.
Thanks, Dave.
That's creative. So all we're looking for is creativity.
Yeah, I'm looking at 253 really quick, and somebody, and I imagine them grabbing a certain part of their anatomy. Cook this, Jake.
I like that. That's the winner. You're the winner, 253.
That's pretty good. See, that, I mean, they even come after a nice guy like Jake. It's
He's a guest. He's on.
Nobody's
for 25 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody's safe here. What else is there, Brian?
Well, from the 206, we have, I don't know if this will be taken as a mean tweet. I know what Dave Wyman looks like, but whenever I hear him talk, I picture Jeff Fisher.
I don't really get that one.
Really? Jeff Fisher. He's kind of badass looking. He's got the mullet and the
mustache. Yeah, that's a compliment, Dave.
Oh, sure it is, Jim. Sure it is. That's like El Diablo. I have no idea what El Diablo looks like. Like, I have a picture in my head of what he looks like, but I told Bob, don't ever show me a picture of him. So when we meet, and maybe you can just, like, he'll be in, like, a crowd, just go which, and, you know, pick out which one you think he is. But I have no idea what
you
he
would
looks
never
like.
Do it. You'd like have him. if he were sitting in front of us at Edgar's Cantina and we were broadcasting there and he were in the crowd, I'd give you 10, 15 guesses, and I'm guaranteeing you wouldn't find him.
Really?
Oh, really?
Man, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by this.
Yeah. You know what he looks like, right, Jim?
I see his picture on Twitter, and he kind of looks the way he sounds to me.
Oh, I don't know. Well, hopefully we'll get an opportunity to test that out.
What else,
what
Brian?
I should do is get like a police sketch artist and describe it to him and have the idea of what's in my head come out.
Yeah. See how close you are.
Oh, that'd be good. Yeah.
From the 253. That's all right, Dave. About 80% of Seahawks fans don't remember you being here either. I know you guys talked to this guy a little bit.
I had mentioned that there was a few people in Denver that said, oh, I don't remember you there. And the guy says, 80% of us don't remember you there. Yeah.
And then I wrote back to him.
710-710.
I wrote back to him going, oh, nice job. Good, mean text. And he said, that wasn't meant to be mean. I was just being honest. I was like, damn.
Yeah, he was just being a punk. Is what
that was the part that cut the deepest, for sure.
Well, I'll say this. Fans who were here when Dave Wyman was playing for the Seahawks definitely remember him. I'll stick up for you on that one, Dave. It's true, though. I'll rip you on everything else, but I'm not going to rip you on your playing career.
Well, I appreciate that, Jim.
What else you got, Brian?
We have from the 425, listening to Dave rave about the match after dissing the Masters. Now I've got to throw away my belt.
What?
Okay.
I don't get that one. I don't get it. They're smarter than me because I don't get that one. Somebody said here from the 425, Jim smiles like he's posing for his obituary photo. Not sure where they're looking at.
Is that from our photo where we were at the VMAC or whatever for...
Maybe.
For the station? That one?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Do you pose for an obituary photo? I didn't totally understand that one. I feel like that one might just be one that's picked out of the repertoire. I don't know if that's one you plan
I'll put
ahead.
It in simple terms. Jim looks dead.
Doesn't Jim always make fun of your smile when you're doing the Seahawks post-game show on TV, Dave?
Yeah, he does.
The
he
TV
always does,
smile.
Because he knows I don't want to smile, and I have to. And then he gives me a hard time about looking at the wrong camera.
I love that.
But
I love that. I'm always sitting there with a beer on my couch just chuckling.
This comment is very close to the comment, one of my favorite. Like, I say this about Charlie Casserole all the time, that he died and nobody told him. I think that's what they're basically saying to you about the obituary photo, Jim.
Somebody was explaining the belt thing because you bleep yourself, Dave. It was reference to your story about how you had to throw away your favorite belt after an accident.
Okay. Oh, now I got it. Yeah, that's really obscure there, but I did lose a good belt that day.
What else, Brian? Anything else?
That's all I have from Maura here. If you guys see any that flowed in recently on the text, we can read that or move on to the professor.
Somebody just said,
I think
Jim
the winner
looks well
is
preserved.
Cook this, Jake.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody saying Jim looks well preserved for a dead guy. That's good. 425. 360 says you guys are stupid heads. They told us there. And don't furlough Bob, just force Jim into early retirement, says the 253. So, all right, a couple of late entries there.
Yeah, it wouldn't be early anymore. I'm going to be 63 next month, so, yeah, there you have it.
You got plenty of time, Jim. You're going to be doing this for another 5 years at least. So there you go.
I'll be like Skip Bayless.
No, don't go down that rabbit hole. That's nobody wins there.
I think he's in his late 60s, though.
He might be. I don't know. No idea. So we do that every Friday. If you guys are new to the program, you just text in any mean thing that comes into your head about any of us here. And if it's creative, it might make the cut at the end of the week. So just text it in any day, anytime you're listening, 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We're going to come back, talk some football with the professor, John Clayton. That's next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
I feel like there was a lot of learning today on what is Brian Schoening's last day here with the station, his last moments right now. Brian, make it count. Go out with a bang.
First of all, I want to say that since you guys started, you guys got moved to this spot in at the end of September, I believe it was. I've been with you guys Thursday and Friday of each week, and it's just been an absolute honor to be with you guys each and every week and become a part of the team here and a part of the show on Bob, Dave, and Moore. We learned that Jim might have to take one for the team to keep a chip on LJ Collier's shoulder.
And, you know, I don't remember that being like the dominating thought for me as an athlete or anything, but it certainly helped. And it just gets you a little bit more fired up and a little bit more prepared. And so I'm, you know, maybe when we get LJ Collier in there, maybe we can all just needle him. Just say, man, yeah, we thought you were a bust last year. You know, we just like, where is this guy? You know, just add a little fuel to the fire for him, because it sounds like he's going to use it. And like I said, when he gets that first
don't
sack,
do that. He might punch Jim.
Yeah. Yeah, Jim would be the guy that gets punched probably, but no.
And for the protectors of Jim out there in the listening audience, that wasn't a shot at him. That was just sort of acknowledging there's been a handful of athletes that have wanted to, harm him in a really, really physical, awful way.
Did you say a handful? Maybe two hands full?
Yeah. I know, but when you consider all the athletes that I've dealt with over, you know, what, a 30 or 40-year career, it's only been three or four out of, what, hundreds, thousands? So that's a low percentage. I don't think you can't.
Most people
wait a minute.
Zero or one, though.
No, you can't find a sports writer or sportscaster who's had a 40-year career and has gone over. There's just no way. Bob, you haven't gone over.
I haven't had anybody come after me like that. I had Albert Pujols get upset, but when I went down into the locker room or into the clubhouse to talk to him, nobody was holding him back. It wasn't a Michael Bennett situation or a Gary Payton situation.
You know what blows me away the most about that Michael Bennett confrontation? I made $75 for that story from the Kitsap Sun. $75.
Was it worth it?
And yeah, I mean, I appreciate being, you know, employed by the Kitsap Sun for three or four years, and I loved living over there, so it's not really I'm trashing on the Kitsap Sun because I love that newspaper. But I just, when I look back on it, I'm going, that guy just about, I mean, he didn't threaten to kill me, but I think he wanted to. And I thought to myself, I made $75 for that story. No, it wasn't. Probably wasn't worth it.
Well, had somebody let him go or he acted on it. you would have made a lot more than 75 bucks.
I've never seen anybody that angry that didn't punch somebody or choke somebody.
I stood tall in the pocket, Dave. I was tall in the pocket.
Bob, even at the end, I had to tell Jim to shut up because he was like, wait a minute. Michael, like almost trying to draw him back in the room. I'm like, Jim, shh, just let him go.
Yeah, Jim was looking for a payday.
Well, maybe that was it, but I don't think so. He just,
you think I'd be sitting here doing what we learned if Michael Bennett had socked me one? I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
You'd be on that legendary dock out in Spokane with your dog and a couple of beers.
What else did we learn, Brian?
Well, we learned what Rick Riz has been up to during the coronavirus pandemic.
I'm watching my goatee grow. I had a beard, and I looked more like Ernest Hemingway, so I shaved that part off, and I kept the goatee. I went with the George Clooney. So I'm watching the whiskers grow, but I'm trying to stay busy, you know, working in the backyard. Got that all cleaned up. I've rearranged the junk drawer at least a couple of times. You know, the drawer with all the Tupperware stuff. I've done that twice now, and I've always enjoyed cooking. So I love doing that, but I got into baking, too. I burnt the heck out of a banana bread, the bottom part. The upper half was okay, so I ate that. I ate some Italian bread. But I'm just watching, you know, a lot of movies, as everybody else is doing, and just trying to stay ready just in case we start up the baseball season here in the very near future. But I'm going nuts.
I love that he salvaged the top half of the banana bread. That's awesome.
That remind you of the muffin stumps, Bob, at all?
Yes, the muffin tops.
The muffins. Yeah, muffin top episode of Seinfeld. I like how Rick was like, he's so desperate for doing some play-by-play. He gave us like a play-by-play on the banana bread.
So good. And the nicest guy in the world with the best laugh ever.
He absolutely
is. Oh, that when he's got the laugh, but then when he gets into that giggle, that laugh combo giggle, that's the best.
Awesome. Just makes you smile. Just makes me smile the second I hear it. I love that guy.
I love that Rick Riz has a junk drawer, just like everybody else. I felt like that was really humanizing for Riz.
He's a human junk being.
Drawer, just like that. This guy's really like a god to you, Brian. If you...
Yeah, Brian, as much as you put him on a pedestal, Brian, he's a human being like the rest of us.
I grew up with that guy's voice in my car. It was really special to get to work with him for a while.
That's cool.
Did we learn anything else, Brian?
We lastly learned what Jake's official affiliation is with the cooking people.
Well, I don't know if I'm the face of the cooking people, but, you know, I always get a crack out of that as I hear you guys on the afternoon show. But I think that I definitely lean towards that way, but I also might not be as extremist as let Russ cook people out there. So I guess I'm here to explain what a reasonable cooking looks like for Russell Wilson. How about that?
I guess he's a moderate. If you were going to use it in political terms, the way you do with Republicans and Democrats, he's not a hardcore. He's a moderate.
Mm-hmm. Well, and how about that? I saw people saying that they should let Russ simmer. I thought that was pretty funny. Yeah, some of the things. I mean, I think it's hard for Jake to explain to, you know, because it's like, well, it's not necessarily passing, but yet they should pass more on first and second down. There's a lot of things that I think, you know, him and Russ talk about. So, but he did a great job, and yeah, I mean, I just everybody loves Jake, right? How do you not love Jake? Although I did think it was funny when the texter said, "Cook this, Jake," just because it's
Jim liked that one too.
He's such a nice guy. Yeah, it was good. It was well done.
I did like that one, and also want to say thanks a lot, Brian, for all the work that you've done for us, and really appreciate all your efforts, and best of luck back in Boston with your new venture, and I know you're going to do well with it, and I'll get that tee time set up at Druid's Glen, I promise. We'll get that going.
Yeah, we got to play some golf, Jim.
Yeah, we will.
Brian, try to remember the little people in your life, you know, when you make it big.
Yeah.
When you're a big shot.
I just want to make sure that I get a video of the chug off between Jim and Moyer. I don't know if I'll be able to be in attendance for that. I don't know when that's going to happen, but I hope that I get the video of that when it eventually does.
Oh, you will. We'll make it happen. Yeah, and don't forget, Mora is a part of that. Jim's got to find his way through Mora first.
That's true.
And then he gets a crack at Moyer.
I might lose in the semis.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Brian, great stuff. We appreciate you, man. And,
thanks,
and you
Brian.
Feel free to
love
text
you,
into the show. Send in some mean texts if you want through, you know, when you're out there in Boston.
Yeah, I will. You'll get a few. You'll get a few here and there for sure.
Perfect. All right. I want to thank our guests today, Rick Riz, John Clayton, Jake Heaps, and Shannon Dreyer. Great stuff out of everybody. Great show. If you missed it, head to 710sports.com. Click that podcast button, then click on our picture. It's all right there for you. And other news, Get in the Cage is back. I know Jim is very excited about this.
Yes.
The first episode.
Hey, wait a minute. You give me a hard time
back.
About
so
promoting
much
the
better
golf show?
Than the golfing show. So much better
wait
than the
a minute.
Golfing show.
Get in the well, wait here's, a minute. Here's, this is
this
sponsored,
is
Jim. This is sponsored, Jim. So our thanks to the Emerald Queen Casino. Well, you know, I don't ever hear you mention
this. Fairway Mortgage of Seattle.
Yeah. But the latest edition to Get in the Cage will be up there for you. For you MMA fans, if you're not into MMA, you don't need to worry about it. But speaking with Damon Martin from MMAfighting.com, so our thanks to the Emerald Queen Casino. That is up there for you on the podcast page as well. Everybody, have a great weekend. Stay safe. We'll talk to you on Monday right here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.